Local events coverage on Radio St. Pete. Another Suncoast Tiger Bay Club luncheon held yesterday at the St. Petersburg Museum of History. It was the annual legislative review with Peter Schorsch, president of Extensive Enterprises, publisher of some of Florida's most influential news media properties, including FloridaPolitics.com and Sunburn, the morning read of what's hot in Florida politics. Peter's first blog was for 3 years running, ranked by the Washington Post as the best state-based blog here in Florida. State Representative Lindsey Cross also spoke on the program, recorded at the St. Petersburg Museum of History. Suncoast Tiger Bay, the legislative review with Peter Schorsch.
For many long-term Tiger Bay members, Peter needs no introduction. He is the publisher of some of Florida's most influential media and websites. The Washington Post recently recognized him as the best state-based blog in Florida. He often goes beyond covering just the performative legislation and digs into those actions or inactions that have gone unnoticed in the headlines and may have major eminent impacts. He's a homegrown individual who sets his priorities and works the checklist. And perhaps one of the most admirable, in my opinion, pieces of your bio that I found is that you list yourself as a husband and father person. So thank you very much and welcome.
Thank you. I'm a tiger at heart, so I'm irreverent in my view of Tiger Bay, and so I dress casually because I'm going to play tennis afterwards, and I enjoy, and I've made an argument for Tiger Bay's for a year and throughout the state, and I wish more people took advantage of them. I wish lawmakers and political people took advantage of them. I think about, for some of you in the audience, like the great thunderous moment when the late David Zacum asked Charlie Crist if he was gay, and it made headlines in the Tampa Bay Times. I was just in the Capitol Tiger Bay. Often they just had Al Cardenas and another gentleman from No Labels and had a really good program. And I wish that Lindsey Cross was not the only lawmaker that was here today. And I do remember a time not so long ago when other Republican lawmakers would be here. The Chris Latvalas and Jeff Brandises and the Ed Hoopers of the world would come to these. And so shame on them for not being here today. And that's a good jumping off point. Usually this is a legislative panel, and usually I was thinking it was going to be a legislative panel. But as you all probably know from following my Twitter account, I'm never at a loss for words, so we're gonna wing it here, and you're basically getting a Twitter stream of conscience in the real life. My former colleague, Janelle Taylor, is gonna ask me a couple of non-prompted questions. I hope that they're pointed, because I do like good, tough questions. I liked, Jim Gillespie's probably got 75 of the Tigers back at home, but I do have a few of those Tigers. I think I asked Rick Baker, who was going to shave his mustache, if it meant becoming mayor again. And so I'm proud of my Tigers that I've won. I always felt like I was the young, now I'm not young at all, but I always felt like good being like the 35-year-old going up against Gillespie and who's the guy, Tom?
Tom Dunn.
Tom Dunn, yeah. I'm Tom Dunn. Like, nobody knew who he was. 45-second question. I love people, that no matter how many times the executive director says, please have a question, don't make a speech, and then you've always got some SOB in the back just like, well, I don't think Ron DeSantis is very cool, and I don't like this, and I don't like that, and you got people, question, please ask a question, and then the timekeeper, and those are the good old days. I think, if I'm going to jump off onto one thing, I think the fact that there are not more Republicans here to defend their record is indicative of where we are at in Florida politics right now. For better and worse, and I know who this audience is, and I know where it kind of skews, and I don't want to get into the position of defending the legislature for what it just did, but I will make this argument for it. And it's, if you go back to 2015, 2016, the Florida legislature gaveled early out of session. It basically crashed. Steve Crisafulli, who was an accidental speaker, is basically run by now University President Richard Corcoran. They gaveled out. The session had collapsed. They couldn't get the budget done. It's just chaos. That even at the worst of the legislature, that doesn't happen. They usually reach signing die, they come back to it, et cetera. But the idea of Steve Crisafulli on day 57 or day 58 out of day 60 getting up there, surprising the Senate, really showing up the Senate, and crashing down the legislature without a budget was unprecedented. That same year, and this was, remember, redistricting starts at the census process, so it starts at the beginning of the decade, but 2016, the legislative maps get tossed out by the by the Supreme Court. They have to go back and draw new state Senate maps after a five-year process. And the Associated Press editors, this is back when there were more newspapers, more local news editors, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. They voted that the top two political stories of the year were the crashing down of the legislature and the redistricting maps. And there's a variety of other stories. This person may have resigned, that person resigned. But basically, it was a complete indictment of the Republican legislature. They couldn't pass a budget, they couldn't stay organized even amongst themselves to get things done, and they couldn't do one of their two basic functions, which is to redistrict themselves. That it took them 6 years. Not a single Republican House incumbent lost election that year. So if things are so bad, if they are so horrible, how is it that even in battleground districts like Lindsey Cross's at the time, still is a battleground district, is one of the few remaining, there were more then than there are now. But even then, under maps drawn by Barbara Pariente, who is a left-leaning Supreme Court justice, how is it that not a single Republican House incumbent lost? And so I would posit that the voters that elected these folks were content with their what had occurred. They are content with the state government that is up there. I will say a lot of my worldview, fast forward 7 years, pandemic, war in Ukraine, whatever you want to put in those bills on. I spent, my daughter, who I know a lot of you know through social media, she shows horses. And so we've spent the last 2.5 years since the pandemic, I don't know if there's anything scarier, but me driving a 45-foot RV around the country, and I have lots of comments on the interstate system, but that's a whole other program, going from one horse show to another. I've spent probably 7 or 8 months literally at rural horse shows, what I would call Trump country, where there's as many Trump signs out there as there are American flags. And so a lot of what I see now, and I don't want to say that I'm red-pilled by any means because I hate so many of the things that have gone on, but I'm just saying that a lot of what you're going to hear from me is, yeah, but I know a lot of you are probably angry in here. If you are not, we do a like 12,000 word, no, just with 16,000 words list of the winners and the losers coming out of session. And it's real insider stuff. I urge you to read it. It's not just teachers. It gets into the real nuts and bolts of it. And I said, number one, the biggest losers is anybody who is not a white male Christian. That is the biggest losers coming out of the Florida legislative session. As the father of a daughter and the husband to a very strong former political operative that a lot of you either know or see on social media, it's not easy being in my house, and it's not easy swallowing a lot of these things. Michelle sits at the during the national anthem. I mean, we were just at the Rays game the other day, and I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, until I have equal rights, I'm not standing for this national anthem. I'm like, listen, Colin, I mean, that doesn't mean you get to eat the chicken fingers still through it. She's like, well, if I'm sitting, I'm gonna have my food. And she's getting looks from all the people, but that's where she's coming from right now. She doesn't feel that she has the same equal rights as men do in the state of Florida or in this country. And so I just want to kind kind of preface all of that before we get into what just happened, what the F just happened during the legislative session. And it basically starts, you know, it starts basically Ron DeSantis. I'll be very clear, and some of you may have known Ron DeSantis growing up here. I was the first pundit, or whatever I am, to say that Ron DeSantis was going to win. Back in, I think, early on, I was talking to the DeSantis people. There was nobody else talking to the DeSantis people. They were 30 points behind Adam Putnam. But if you looked at where the Republican base was at, you just knew that this guy was going to get ahead of Adam Putnam. And I remember, I think the key moment was the Fox debate. I think it was July 28, 29 of 2018. The reporters kept asking questions. The Florida reporters wanted the two candidates to be asked questions about Florida policy. What is candidate's position on education? Or what do they think about this? The Fox News audience wanted to know about Benghazi. The Fox News audience wanted to know about her emails. Ron DeSantis knew how to answer questions like that. Adam Putnam could tell you, and I remember there's a great video of Adam Putnam being able to direct this woman was asking him, like, well, how do you get from Pahokee to Aix, Florida? And he knew every back road on how to get there. And he could do that from Clay County down to Collier. Ron DeSantis probably, I don't think that he was probably very well traveled in Florida before he was elected governor, but he knew how to answer, what about their emails? And that's how he won that primary. And if you knew the Republican Party of Florida, you knew that eventually they were going to beat Andrew Gillum no matter what they put in front of him. The Republican Party of Florida is the Death Star. I mean, it is unstoppable. It is the most organized machine ever. And it doesn't have, I always say, it doesn't help that basically they are the Harlem Globetrotters playing against, the Washington Generals of politics. The Democrats just consistently find a way to lose. There were some of us who were making the argument early on that Gwen Graham could have won, but that's neither here nor there. Ron DeSantis gets in there. We get into the pandemic, and I will say very clearly, and I've said this a lot, I think he got radicalized during the pandemic. I think both he and Casey got radicalized. I don't think that that's a mean thing to say. I think there are a lot of people, maybe some in this room, I think there's a lot of people out there who got radicalized under the 2020 election and the pandemic. And now just imagine if your new parents isolated in Tallahassee, are you not even more susceptible to becoming radicalized? And I think that that is, if somebody put Ron DeSantis on a couch right now, I think that that's what they would say from him. I would say that I think that there are questions about whether or not he has some mental health issues that he should, that are maybe 30 years ago would have been diagnosed early on. I don't think that that is out of the line. If you read about how he interacts with people, that doesn't mean he could be governor. It doesn't mean that he's not a genius. It just means that he has certain personality quirks, like Elon Musk, like others, that we just didn't know about. And then you added in the isolation of the pandemic, and on the other side of it, you get a very angry, angry man. And that's where we're at now. And one of the key things about Ron DeSantis is, if you listen to him again and again, he says, I won with 50.1% of the vote, but that means I get to execute 100% of the executive power. And for 2.5 years, he was surrounded by people, moderates, former Charlie Crist, Rick Scott. I mean, it says a lot that former Rick Scott people are now viewed as moderates, but that's what they're at. They had brakes off in place. And then, I'm not saying, I don't know what happened, but at some point here, Ron DeSantis became what he is now. And I think the one moment where I saw Ron DeSantis, and I've tracked him for 12 years, the one moment that I saw Ron DeSantis emotional about the pandemic was when he talked about his parents or Casey's parents not being able to come to the governor's mansion to see their newborn children. And that the one thing that he was really upset about was the glass partitions at nursing homes. There was something like the Grinch when the heart grows three sizes too big. That's what happened. It was like the one thing. If you think about it, Ron DeSantis has never acknowledged the 85,000 people, or whatever the number is now, 80,000 something Floridians that have died during the pandemic. He's never said it. He's never said we should have a moment of silence. people. In fact, he just now, an hour ago, signed three bills. Basically, like Ron's running into this buzzsaw where he doesn't have new material, so he's going back to the hits. And for him, the hits are COVID. And so he keeps hitting the COVID line again and again. But as literally today, the national pandemic it's over, but it's been declared over. Title 42 rolls away. The national emergency rolls away. I think he's going to run into some of these things. It's going to be, he's a band right now without a new album, and he wants to go back out on tour. So then Ron basically, and I don't know the exact moment, but I think what happened was there was a moment where Ron DeSantis decided that he wanted to surround himself with people that he knew would do things, that do what he wanted, instead of the crisp Scott holdovers. And so that's why, and you see DeSantis say it now. DeSantis says we had some people that were opposed to our agenda and we got rid of them. And now he's brought in a whole new band of people. And with that, he's also, contrary to anything Jeb Bush did, any Democrat did, he's involved himself in Republican primaries. And so where the Senate used to be this kind of bastion of moderation, Latvala, Brandis, Comey, et cetera, DeSantis has weighed in. He weighed in at about four or five primaries, and he put in Blaise Aiglia, a former Florida Party chair, over Ralph Nasulla, who is also kind of out there, but he probably wouldn't have been as out there as Blaise. Blaise is Ron DeSantis' family. He backed up Clay Yarborough, a very, very conservative lawmaker from Northeast Florida. He went and kind of hand-selected Jonathan Martin, another county party chair. You wonder who is in there now passing these bills. This is not a legislature that, when I came up, I worked for Dennis Jones. A lot of you may remember Dennis. Dennis was a chiropractor. Frank Barkas was a chiropractor. Leslie Waters, another one of our clients back in the day. She ran an insurance small business. And the people who were up there, Ed Homan from Tampa was, an orthopedic surgeon. These people, they weren't Cincinnatians, but they were people that were part-time lawmakers, and they were interested in real estate agents, et cetera. Now these people that are in this legislature, the Joe Gruters of the world, the Jonathan Martins of the world, they are full-time political operatives. And that means that they are coming more from the right and more from the left than any of us in this room. These are the most diehard of the diehards. And so when we all get upset, how could they be passing these bills? Well, these are people that they're no longer elected because of closed primaries, because of the narrowing of the field from the onset. These are the people that are beholden really only to their executive committees back in their counties. And that's why you get the Anthony Sabatinis of the world. That's why you get so many of the Byron Donalds of the world. So many of these people are just political animals, and they're coming from the fringes of their parties. And so you get to this legislative session, and Ron DeSantis has a House Speaker. Paul Renner has said, during the last special session, Chris Froehlich from Palm Harbor was still in charge. He had been fending off some of the bad things about the insurance reforms because Chris is a little bit more attached to the trial lawyers than not. He had a little bit of his political strength based on that. So he had resisted some of the things that you would later see that they would do. But when you're a rising speaker, and the way Florida politics works is that the person that's going to be speaker in their last year before they become speaker is probably at the zenith of their power, while the old line is probably on the way out the door, can't do anything for you, is trying to find a job and move on. And so Renner literally went to Sproles and said, give the governor what he wants. And that's why you got an insurance special session that was, by all accounts, just a complete bailout of the insurance industry. I mean, there just wasn't, I mean, they took away, what do you call the attorney's fees? One-way attorney's fees. They decimated the trial bar and the ability for the consumer to go after the insurance companies. And I'm not saying that that's right or wrong. I'm just saying for years, these things have been debated about, had been nibbled about at the edges, and then all of a sudden, it went this complete opposite way. And so Paul Renner, and what's very interesting about Paul Renner is this is a person who, and I don't know if you all know this or not, but Paul Renner lost his first election. He lost his special election by 3 votes. He wasn't in that district that he's in now. And Paul Renner's a decent man. I think Paul is a very decent person. But He barely got in there. I mean, he barely got in there. And yet he wields 100% of that legislative power. And I think there was an article by Politico that said DeSantis has his speaker. There was a moment, and I don't know if you remember this, Representative Cross, but Toby Oberdorf, who's a pretty decent guy when it comes to, all of this is relative. Like, Randy Fine is an asshole. We'll all agree on that part. You know, Anthony Sabatini is right there. You know, Webster Barnaby calling, I think he called transsexual people imps and goblins. Is that right? Not to misquote that. So he's right there. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you've got Lindsey Cross, of course. But then, you know, in the middle, you've got like the Toby Oberdorf, you know, the Tom Leakes, some people that are, they're decent folks. And they just happen to be wearing a different jersey than the other side. Toby Oberdorf tweeted out something. He said, "Glad to call Ron DeSantis my boss." And he had probably, do you remember this? Did you see it? So he deleted it very quickly. For a state lawmaker to call a governor his boss is a complete abdication of their responsibility. And in fact, I talked to a legislative, an upcoming speaker who I'm very close with, and I said, "Did you see that thing that Toby did?" And he was just like, "It's atrocious." He said it in a Cuban voice, just to give you a little hint about who that was. And nobody else got that, but I and so, but that's the way they do things right now. DeSantis has his speaker. Blaise Iglesias, state senator, just took over Ron DeSantis' political committee as part of the machinations of him running for office. Toby Oberdorf says the governor's his boss. And so you now have a completely different view of the legislature and the governor. In fact, one of the things that I said to another legislative leader, I said, "What happens when this guy gets embarrassed out of the primary?" And I guarantee you that is what is going to happen. When he gets embarrassed out of this primary, he said, "We will reassert legislative independence." And I'm like, I'll believe it when I see it. That's coming, and we can talk about that in a second. How am I doing on time? Just to run down to the session, let's see, some what is the list of horribles that we can come up with? Obviously, and I love the imagery behind me. Let's start with the thing that I think is going to hurt Ron DeSantis the most. And I could show you my text messages, and I will tell you, like, anybody that knows, I have a different economic model for my journalism. I'll just leave it at that. And I will just say that it puts me in some different rooms than other people, and probably provide some access. And I do talk, I talk to as many people as anybody does without revealing what they're saying. And I will say that from what I can tell, it's the Republican lawmakers who are telling me the thing that is going to hurt Ron DeSantis the most if he gets to the general election, or even before that, is the 15-week to 6-week abortion ban. Not only is it just Gilead-level public policy, I don't even know what to say with it. I feel it's one of these things, like, I'm so embarrassed because I don't have an answer for it. I don't know how to look, and even the women in this room who have daughters or whatnot, and I'm Catholic, and I'm pretty, I get pro-life and stuff like that. I don't know what to say. It sucks. Like, it's the worst. And the worst of it is the effing Republican women that go along with it, like Aunt Lydia. The Kelly Stargells of the world. Like, there is an atrocious moment. I don't know if you... Yeah, I just called Aunt Lydia. I just called Kelly Stargell Aunt Lydia. Don't let that zinger. That would be a good... Like, anybody else gives you that kind of content, you'd be tweeting that. I mean, that's good content. That's just one of, like, 40 that I get. If you look at, there was a CNN story that former Times reporter Steve Contorno did, I think it came out last Monday. Let's just take a quick aside. I gotta say, the Florida media is so decimated right now. First of all, it's embarrassing that I'm the guy. That is embarrassing. I've said it before, doesn't matter how well-meaning I am, the fact that I, of all people, am the, like, I used to be like the leader of the Rebel Alliance. That's what, you know, like, and the fact that I'm in charge now, that I have the most reporters, that I know the most, is an embarrassment. First of all, I took no journalism school. I can't write to save a lick. I mean, I barely can spell. I mean, I know I have a good nose for a story. I know how to get people to talk, et cetera, et cetera. I have some tools and the thing. But, like, this is terrible. Like, it's just, it's an embarrassment to all of the journalists throughout history that the guy down here, in fact, like, I just had dinner with, last Monday, and I made it a big deal, and it's kind of a scene. I wish I could write about it. It was Maggie Haberman, the lead New York Times reporter, Jonathan Swan, who's the other lead, and then Nicholas Nahamis, who just won. He broke the Panama Papers and his past the Times, and they're like, hey, everybody says we got to meet with you. And like everybody was like hiding it, like that they were talking to the New York Times, because the Gestapo, Santa's world, will crush you if they find out that you're talking to them. I went to the big restaurant up there, El Luso, got the main table, and I just kept like, I would whisper and I'd whisper, everybody sees us and they're talking. Matt Dixon, who's another reporter, is like jealous that I'm talking to him. And every now and then I would go like, well, Casey told me, and like people are like, what? because Florida media is so decimated, I urge you, you really have got to start looking for alternative sources. And there is some good national level reporting coming into Florida. And so you might be missing like the Steve Contornos, who was a good reporter writing for CNN, because it's not going on air. It's just going on their digital site. And there's a lot of that. Matt Dixon, who was probably, you know, might equal in scoopage, he's now at NBC News, but he's not on air. All this stuff is on digital, but you need to go look at that. Like he was the one who yesterday broke the news about Bedoya going over to the political community, basically the first step of DeSantis doing what he's about to do. So Contorno has a story out about a young woman who has to bring to birth a child that the doctor said is dead and is going to die. And she found out 13 weeks ahead of time. So for 13 weeks, she's carrying a baby that she knows is going to die. There is, it is not, hey, this is not choices, this is not Down syndrome, this is not, they've got three elbows disease, which is what I always feared when I was, when we had Ella, because you're just so scared of everything as a parent. And then the child is born, dies within hours right there. That is horrible. That is the worst, I mean, scenario, short of being raped in Ukraine, I can't think of anything worse. I mean, there just is nothing worse. The sponsor of the bill is Ask for Comment. There's two sponsors, Erin Brawl, who's actually decent, like, she actually fights some fights, and like, I don't want to throw her in the thing, and she does stick up in some things, and so Erin Brawl's pretty, she's like right here on the Randy Fine scale. Jenna is like, hey, around and find out, like, is literally that callous in her quote. She's like, we care about life here. Sorry that that happened. No, didn't say sorry. Just like, no, there was nothing. There was no, I'm sorry that this is happening to her, but we value life. Like, that would have been maybe an okay comment. But the idea that that is like, hey, well, we just passed bills and, you know, we want elections and elections have consequences. That's disgusting. That's horrible. And that's where we're at right now. I think back to Randy Fine. And they asked Randy Fine last year, like, why he was doing something. Some horrible, persecuting bill. And they're like, why are you doing this? He's like, because we can. And that's what this is right now. This is the because we can legislature. Because we can. Because Lindsey Cross and her people are really bad at their jobs. And their job is to win elections. And they sit there and they fight over the small, like, there is no more worse organized organization than the Florida Democratic Party, especially when it comes to trying to win elections. Like, they fight over crumbs while Republicans eat cookies. And they don't share. The consultants are all horrible and get hired again. The same consultants get hired again and again. The same people that are doing the direct mail. Maybe even for Lindsey's winning campaign. I'm glad she won. I really am. I think I said to Lindsey, I think I said something like, I'll do whatever I can, like, behind enemy lines or something like that as we try. Like, and we did, like, I think I dumped my ads price to her. Like, we charge Republicans this, and we charge, and like, and in fact, there was another Democrat who was so pissed at me, Eunice Ortiz, because we didn't help her. And I'm off on a tangent, other than to say, like, Democrats continue to just not do well at the election part, and so they have nobody to blame. I'll give you an example. Amanda Mackey, right? I'm sorry, not Amanda Mackey. Not Anna Paulina, either. The person that lost Edinburgh, that was a state representative. Does anybody remember who I'm thinking of? She was... Amanda, she should absolutely be a state senator right now. There is no doubt she should have been a state senator right now. Remember, Republicans won those seats in 2018. Those were Democratic lines. Amanda Murphy should have won that seat, but the Florida Democratic Party didn't send down the money. I know it because I talked to consultants until about 2-3 weeks out. And they're like, this is early voting. It started 45 days ago. What are you doing? That Ed Hooper, nice guy, firefighter. He's over here on the good scale. He just passed a nice bill to make. We get priority. Floridians get priority at RV camp reservations. I love that. I think the one good thing that came out of it. She should have won. She should have won easily. But you had terrible people like Gary Farmer, Arthenia Joyner running the Senate caucus, and they just got decimated. They constantly are surprised by the deviousness of Republicans. There's all this complaining about the ghost candidate scandal, which I think some of you may have read about. Well, why don't Democrats do that? There's like a moral purity there. Like, well, why don't you recruit, like, you know, like they, this is horrible, but one of the things that they do, like when you have a Hispanic district, is you put 7 people that have the same name, like they did in Senate District 39. You put 7 people named Jose Rodriguez. That is not me making that up. That is not a racial comment. That is who lost, is Jose Javier Rodriguez. So you get a guy named Javier Jose Rodriguez to also run, and then you get another guy. And that is why in Senate District 39, a pretty responsible lawmaker lost. I don't know why the Democrats don't get like 9 guys named Billy Ray Bob to run in Senate District 32 in Lake County and have them split up the Klan vote and get some Democrat in there. Abortion bill sucks. The Disney stuff, because I know you, all right, so I love Disney. I've been on 25 Disney cruises. I battle all day long. Like, one of my favorite things to do is, because I do have some pretty good sources in Trump world, they didn't recognize how bad Ron had messed up on this one. I actually got to call them, and so we got the quote from Trump about how Trump said something like, Ron DeSantis just got out-negotiated by Mickey Mouse. Watching Trump and DeSantis go at it is, I just tweeted this because it's just going on again today. It's like, as a race fan, it's like watching the Yankees and the Red Sox and the stadium just falls in on them. And you're just like, please, I need you all to have like a 23-inning game and all of your pitchers blow their rotator cuffs. Please let us do that. So the Disney thing, the key thing on the Disney thing, and we have a great reporter, Gabrielle Roussan, shout out to her, she's at the Orlando Sentinel. She covers tourism for us, and so she, like, one thing I've been decent at is I run the Tampa Bay Rays of journalism, where I have like a bunch of young pups, you know, that we underpay for like a couple years. We give them a lot of like at-bats. We bring in some veterans to teach them, and it's like basically moneyball journalism. And so Gabrielle was like, I want to have a family. I'm like, well, work for us part-time. And then when all this stuff started breaking, I had the tourism reporter ready to go. And so she listened into all the shareholder calls. And the key thing on that, and you're going to hear it again and again, is keep listening for that word retaliatory. That is what Bob Iger keeps saying. He's so much smarter than Chapek. Like, Chapek got work. First of all, Disney messed up. Disney, which is all-powerful, got in after the fact and then didn't know what to do. And so they literally tried to turn in their homework a week late, and then they turned in the wrong homework. They turned in the math homework and the chemistry. And they deserve to get popped for that. I don't think that they deserve to get all of this right now, but they deserve to be embarrassed. That was Bob Chapin. Bob Iger is a whole different beast, a lot smarter, and he has seen that this is basically a First Amendment case, and you cannot use the state government, the powers of the state, to retaliate against private entity or a citizen because of their First Amendment rights. And the reason why we know that this is a winning case is the behavior of the Republicans over the last 2 weeks. Like, for about a year, they kept saying, we're just going to go F with Disney. Spencer Roach, he's probably on this right here, all the Spencer but Randy Fine, Blaze, all the sponsors of the bill. And I gotta tell you something. There's a special election that just opened up last night. Fred Hawkins, District 42, is one of like three or four people that basically represent Disney. I like Fred, but he had the gut, or he had the audacity to stand by DeSantis and sponsor the Disney bills. If Disney does not find a Democrat, and the Democratic Party does not find a candidate for that seat, which went for Joe Biden by 7 points, then there's no hope, no help for the Democrats ever. They don't go in that special election, that one special election, in the one district where the guy messed with Disney. If Disney doesn't take all the money that they would spend on an amusement park ride and put it into building the perfect candidate, then there's no help for the Democrats. Oh, we're here. Yep, okay. And so on that note, so the Disney thing, they're eventually going to lose. I think Ron is going to have to do the one thing he doesn't want to do, which is back down. Real quick on the budget, I will say this. The one good thing about this, the state legislature right now, is there's $115 billion in the, $117 in the budget right now. It'll get chopped down to about $114 after Ron does his vetoes. We came out of the recession, I think we were at $77 billion. I think the last crisp Scott budget was about $77 billion. So the fact that we've grown, they're like me with weight loss. They've lost half their ass. They've gained half their ass over the last year. That means that there is a lot of money. Even Lindsey Cross is getting appropriations. Like, I love her to death. Like, somebody pointed it out. They're like, 25th and what? I'm like, it's Cross's district. How the heck did she get that in there? Now, they may be said, I'm not even mentioning. No one mentioned it. Don't bring that appropriation up because the governor will be looking for things. But it's the budget is so good that Roussan got some money. There's money coming back into this district. There's money to go to all the universities, et cetera. So the one good thing is there's a lot of money being thrown at a lot of things. Mental health, the environment. The environment has gotten a lot of money. Probably not as much as some people would like, but a lot of money over the last couple of years. So I have this question. Okay. So.
All right, so Janelle's going to pass and come to Tiger Bay another time. We're going to respect Lindsay's time and give her a few moments while Peter freshens up, and then we're going to line up and do our freshman. Thank you, Lindsay.
Peter is right. I did get some money. We'll start with that. So again, it's nice to have the biggest budget ever in Florida state history, and I'm proud that all of the appropriations that I submitted this year are fully funded in the budget. So keep your fingers crossed that the veto pen is light in our area, and that we can maintain some of those. But it's always fun to listen to what Peter is saying about the session, because he has such a long history and an interesting perspective. So my perspective is as a freshman representative in a super minority, so it's as bad as it sounds. I was able to win my race for District 60. We're in District 60 right now. It starts down in the Salt Creek Marine District, goes up to the St. Pete Clearwater Airport and west into Pinellas Park. I had one of the most successful campaigns as a Democrat in running for a state House seat. And that's largely because I worked my ass off. I started my campaign a year and a half before the race. I raised a lot of money. I knocked thousands of doors. I think that I had some good consultants, but again, I worked really hard. And this is one of the swing districts, so I know that each year, I've already been filed, each year I'm gonna have to work hard to stay up there and represent the people of this area. Some of my priorities were working on education, healthcare, and environmental issues. My first bill was actually an affordable housing bill, and that was a small piece that got included in that larger Live Local bill. So I'm proud that we do have some proactive policies that local governments can implement Besides that, I did not have any other bills that crossed the finish line, but I'll say that I made some good connections, have a better understanding of the process, and we'll do some things smarter, more strategically, differently when we go back in just a couple months, starting in September. Again, I'm going to continue to focus on some of those same buckets, education, healthcare, and environment, with us here on Tampa Bay and our vulnerability to sea level rise and flooding, some of the resilience issues. I think we are getting more attention there, but we're not where we need to be for how important it is to our economy and our quality of life here. I didn't want to focus all of my effort on environmental things and development, but I saw, particularly in the last couple weeks of session, that there were places where I needed to share my experiences and use my voice to point out some things that were bad for growth, really giving a lot of power to developers and taking power away from local governments, from people who are renters in the area. And so I tried to be strategic about when I spoke up, when I asked questions, and the type of comments I offered in debate, particularly on the House floor, because that's just my style, first of all. But with my experience, I did want to call out things. One piece of legislation was related to recovery after the horrible hurricanes that we had last year, but it would preempt any local governments from enacting land development regulations or comp plan amendments that were more burdensome. No definition for more burdensome, but anywhere in a county or a municipality that was either completely or partially located in a county 100 miles from landfall of either Hurricanes Nicole or Ian. So if you think of a 100-mile radius, that's essentially everything from Orange County down to Key West, if you take that partially or completely within that area. And talk with the bill sponsors, and it's the type of scenario that we see time and time again. There's an isolated incident where the city of Naples was trying to limit redevelopment in the community, and the lawmakers from that area couldn't get what they wanted, so they put that policy in to punish the city of Naples, and now it has implications for about 90 house districts around our community. So that means that when places like the city of St. Petersburg are looking at how to incorporate some of these affordable housing initiatives or do redevelopment in the gas plant, that once in a generational redevelopment opportunity that we have, if there's developers that think some of these changes are more burdensome, it's going to be easy for them to challenge that. And really, a lot of these things go back to taking power away from local governments, making it more difficult for citizens like you and I to challenge things that are not consistent with the quality of life that we want to have, maybe that are leading to more vulnerability in our communities. And that's something that I think is really frightening that we continue to see. Something else that happened on the Sunday night before the last week of session is in the implementing bill, which helps the agencies to understand how they're supposed to implement some of the appropriations as part of the general appropriations bill. Well, there was a provision in there that would preempt local governments from having any new or amended local fertilizer ordinances. And first of all, we know that this is a proactive way to reduce pollution at the source. When you see red tide, when you see blue-green algae around the state, we know that it's important to work on pollution prevention. So first of all, it's bad policy. And second of all, it's bad government to put that type of substantial policy into an implementing bill, because there's no opportunity for the public to weigh in. There's no opportunities to change that. Even people who were high up in leadership did not know that language was added into there. And so I think one of my roles this first year has been to bring those things to the attention during debate, so that journalists, the people who are watching the Florida Channel, the maybe five people that actually do, that there's some accountability, and at least that you're putting those things on the public record. We did see some horrific policy with the rationale that they did that because they could. Peter, of course, touched on the six-week abortion ban, which I think is just going to be catastrophic. But there were also some attacks on our higher education systems that are eliminating, the freedom for professors to teach courses, to remove diversity, equity, and inclusion, things that may threaten the accreditation status of programs, anything from healthcare to social work. And we're hearing that people already are choosing to go to different colleges, either as students, the faculty members are looking at different places. So that as one policy is gonna be bad for our state. But when we think of all these things where we're targeting a certain subset of the population or a group that is already just struggling to live their life, we're gonna see people leave our state or choose to go other places. And I think ultimately that's gonna have ramifications on our economy and the things that we value here. I continue to uplift St. Petersburg and Pinellas County as places where I think we're doing so many things right, that we've been proactive. And I hope that the local leaders continue to have the courage in a calculated way to do things that reflect the values of their local communities. But it is a very retaliatory system up in Florida, up in the Tallahassee and some of the leadership up there. And so I do fear for things like our St. Pete Pride Parade that's gonna be happening on June 24th. I'd invite each and every one of you to walk with me and my team in that and celebrate joy and diversity. But I think the next year or so, we're gonna start to see some of the implications of these policies that were passed. And I hope that voters are making these connections and understanding that they do need to hold their leaders accountable, that even if they maybe don't agree with all the tenets of one policy, thinking about what is gonna support their community, the things that they hold dear and hold sacred, and invest in leaders who are gonna help to change that for us.
Thank you. Commissioner Renee Flowers is traveling. I want to recognize her aide, Darlena, who is here with us today. Thank you. Okay. Members of Suncoast Tiger Bay Club, please line up. Ask your question to Peter or to Lindsay. Do not give a speech. Give your name. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tammy Sims. Thank you both very much for being here. And your remarks are a perfect segue into my question, Peter, which has everything to do with the home rule and DEI impacts. So the city leaders just returned from a trip to Austin, Texas. And when we're asked about it, Chris Steinacher, the chamber president, said, we are both blueberries in a tomato soup. And I thought that was very fitting. Both cities proud to stick their neck out to embrace those values. With the announcement of a chief equity officer in the city cabinet and the upcoming Pride Parade, what do you think the ramifications could be for St. Petersburg for standing firm on what we believe in?
That's a great question. And I always appreciate, I said earlier, I appreciate that you always have study Tiger Bay adjacent clothing for days. You still keep, I think that is awesome. Well, I'm worried for Ken Welch. I mean, I am just like, I'm like, brother, man, they are going to come for you sooner or later. And I guess it's like, they just have not figured it out. They already don't like one guy in St. Pete. And so I'm like waiting for them to take a shot at Ken. I mean, in a way, I don't know any place that is adding equity officers right now. I'm proud of them for doing it. Don't get me wrong. I'm proud of them for doing it. But these are, like, so he ran into a buzzsaw with that, the funding for the abortion rights group.
Right.
And I'm not familiar 100%. I just know that State Representatives Bernie Jock and Mike Beltran sent a letter that they would shut down all appropriations to the city if we continue to do that. I would say to him, as somebody who has counseled him politically, like, don't do stuff like that right now. Like, you've got to stay under the radar on that kind of stuff. You just cannot add fuel to the fire. I understand, like, I think we should all be at Pride on the 24th, and we should create a human wall blocking out anybody from taking pictures so that the one, you know, person can send it off and complain that children were exposed to something like that. In fact, I urge you to physically restrain those people, if not do more to them, because that's what they're doing down in Miami and Orlando. They're going to the drag shows, they're taking one picture of a moment, and then they're sending it off, and then they're telling those people's liquor licenses. And so I urge you to take things in your own hands and protect what is important to us on that one. I worry about transportation dollars coming to the area. We don't have a, you know, it used to be when we had Latvala, you know, you could kind of look out for things right now. You know, our state senator is Nick Kosigley, who I really like a lot, but he is definitely, it's like, this is the first time we don't have a state person as a state senator, which I think is tough. I would urge you all to take a very strong look at that congressional race in 2024. No matter what you hear about, I think that would send a strong signal. I think you've got a county commission race that is going to be bitterly contested. I would take a strong stance at that. I would also, you know, one of the things that's happened to me and my wife, and we're okay with her now, but I remember Aaron Abel, like, threw out Michelle out of a women's right group because we supported Rick Baker over Rick Rice. The purity tests on the left keep a lot of allies like me from helping you do more. I'm not 100% there on 100% of things. I'm just not. Listen, who's benefiting more than white dude, right? I mean, like, this whole system, you're taking, for you all to gain power, you're taking it from me, right? I mean, that's basically in a nutshell. I have to recognize that. Overall, that's the demographic here. But to not have, like, Michelle in a women's rights group because she's supporting in a nonpartisan race, and there's stuff like that all the time. So find grace. Bob Gualtieri, he's a Republican, but he's about as fair a Republican as you're going to get. He is like last man standing in a lot of cases. Don't waste your time running a candidate against Bob Gualtieri. Take that person and put them somewhere else. Start making those calculated strategic decisions if you want to win back some of these races.
Harvey Landers, thank you. Aside from the state budget and bills that were passed that generally had bipartisan support, what bills passed by the legislature do you support or thought were good?
So I would go back to trying to think of like a rundown of some of the. Like, there's so many like smaller ones, like the RV. I know that that's small, but it's like that kind of thing does good. Trying to think of all of our winners lists. There's a lot in the insurance area, it's small, but the windshield, and that's a lot of what Tallahassee is about. It's about one industry over another, but there's a lot of like the windshield crack industry, I think is gonna be cleaned up a little bit. That's a bipartisan bill passed by a Democratic state senator and a Republican lawmaker. There's a lot of, there was a lot of like criminal justice reporting laws. I think like Chev Jones had some things in there. And that's what you want out of a legislature is like, hey, we've got these issues. I will be honest, as the father of a 10-year-old, I really don't have a problem with keeping TikTok out of the schools. I don't have a problem with, you know, limiting cell phone use in the schools or enabling teachers to do some of that stuff. So I think like the social media bills by Danny Burgess. Danny Burgess is a good lawmaker. Like, if you usually see his stuff coming, he's got a young family, a lot of that stuff is coming. There's a lot of things that there's a lot of things on homestead exemptions, there's a lot of things for veterans. The funding for teachers is significant. I will say, and this is where my Democratic friends will hate me. I think HB1 is important, is positive in the net run. HB1 is universal vouchers. I know that the educators are gonna scream about that one. And I get it. I think that's a genuine policy argument. I think that is something where it's not about I hate you and you hate me. I think that more choice into the system is good. I think some of the school choice people will say, I don't know if the threshold is right. I don't know if somebody that's making $150,000 should be getting a $10,000 credit or something like that. But, you know, $150,000 isn't what it used to be. But there's a lot of people that are making $70,000 that probably want to get their child into a better school, have no options other because of finances. And so I think that that's a, that, in fact, I would say, I would not be surprised if there's a Tiger Bay panel in the future, a year from now, just dealing with HB1. It is by far, the abortion bill, fortunately, impacts a very small number of people, a significant number of people in a significant way. But we know that the numbers are limited there. HB1 is the most transformative, for better or worse, piece of legislation that I think has been passed, like, ever. Like, universal vouchers changes all of the public education system. It almost, it's not that it ends the public education system, but it makes the public education system pretty much seamless with the private education system. So, fairly significant. I think also for those of you that like charter schools, the idea that the charter school money can now tap into the capital outlay money. Again, you might disagree with that, but I think that that's a significant positive. In the long run, let's clean up charter schools, make them more accountable, but if we are going to have charter schools, they shouldn't be in a Panera. They should be able to apply for funds in the same way. And taxpayers who have those children in those schools, in some way, should have access to that money. So I think that that's a significant one as well.
Thank you. This question is for Lindsay Ann McMullen with CI Doyle Private Wealth. Lindsay, as this state is the third largest state in the country, and as people keep moving here, as affordable housing keeps being an issue, the legislature didn't do a lot with the insurance industry. What's the future? How do we do this? It is at the core of our economic future for the state of Florida, being able to have affordable insurance and flood insurance. So what do we need to do next year? What's the future of the insurance industry?
Thank you for that easy question, Ian. I think the reinsurance market is a place that Tallahassee has not addressed yet, and this is an area that I'm learning about. I know how important it is to our entire state, but particularly our region. Reinsurance is, there's kind of different costs for reinsurance based on where you are. There's a certain amount that insurance companies have to have in the bank to cover their policies. And then from there, once they reach that cap, it's almost like 85 cents on the dollar to get like that next level of reinsurance. As you get higher, that's where it's less expensive and where the state, through the passage of some legislation in our special session, provided some, $2 billion in that support for reinsurance. So I think where we need to focus is that first level of reinsurance after what the pub, the insurance companies need to have. And so I would also defer to people who have more experience in that. Please have them come and talk to me, continue to educate me on that. But I think reinsurance is something that we need to address.
You've been listening to a recording of yesterday's Suncoast Tiger Bay Club luncheon, recorded at the St. Petersburg Museum of History, the Legislative Review, with Peter Schorsch of FloridaPolitics.com and Sunburn, and State Representative Lindsay Cross. The Suncoast Tiger Bay Club serves as a civic commons where thought leaders and citizens of all political stripes come together to discuss the pressing issues of our time. The next program is scheduled for June 7th at 11:30, when Nadine Smith, Equality Florida Executive Director, will speak. Nadine, one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people. For more information and membership information, visit tigerbay.org.